tuned into the Audio Asylum. Let's get crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world's most pointless podcast. Welcome to the Audio Asylum. I'm the usual. I'm Joe. I'm just here. But I'm here with the man, Drew Torres. Drew's been on the show before. How's it going, bro?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
A lot better than what I was like 3 months ago. A lot better than what I was a month ago.
Yeah?
Yes, a lot better. So, I don't know if...
You know, a lot's changed in 3 months, man.
A lot has changed.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah, and we're, like, finally kind of, like, the world's kind of normal-ish now.
It's getting there.
Yeah. Yo, so I don't know if you remember this because I started this, like, 5 years ago, but you were the first ever guest, ever. Like...
I remember.
And I didn't have a mic.
That's all right. I don't have a mic right now either. I'm fucking winging it right now, bro.
Yeah, well, you know, now with cell phones, technology and everything, you sound fine, honestly, on this end.
This is true. Can you hear me all right? You're good?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
All right, cool.
Yeah, but I remember...
Closer so I could hear you fucking better.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, but I remember we recorded that, like... And I didn't have a mic, so we had to sit super close to my shitty laptop.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah. Man. Good times, bro. Good times.
The show's come a long way since then.
Oh, bro. Sure. You guys, man, creative people with your dare pongs and answering the internets and all that, bro. I love that shit. So entertaining,
yeah, man. Your answer to the internet's probably my favorite one, to be honest. But yeah, a lot of stuff is gonna change, as I said, on the past two episodes, but I thought it would be cool to get you back on since all this time has passed and like we have a new audience, still small but growing audience, and like to learn more about you, bro. I mean, I know a lot about you, but I feel like I can learn about you through this episode also.
Oh, I mean, there's always space for freaking knowledge and all that shit. You know, we've known each other, 10, 12 years already or something like that?
And long time.
We still got stuff to learn about each other, man.
For real. I feel like every time we hang out and talk, something new gets learned on either end. Especially me with you. I feel like I learned something every single time I talk to you.
Well, I'm glad, man. I'm glad. That's a beautiful thing, man. You know, like, teach each other. We fucking grow together, you know? It's fucking awesome, man.
Facts, dude. So yeah. For those of you watching or listening that don't know, Drew is a musician here in the Bronx, New York. And you've been at it for quite a while, man.
Tell me about it.
Like, for those that don't know, like, when did, like, the whole journey kind of start?
Oh, man. Well, okay. So, I started playing guitar at around 9 years old. I think I might have just turned, like, 10. So, it was, like, late 9-ish. But I remember that summer, I asked my mom to get me this guitar out of a Fingerhut catalog, bro. Fingerhut, remember that shit?
I don't remember that. Explain what that is to people.
That is like an old school, like, snail mail catalog, where you had to, like, you know, call in your order or send them your order number, what product you want and stuff like that, and where to ship it and everything, and you send a check in the mail to them for that product. So that's obviously pre-internet days.
Yeah, I was just about to say before Amazon existed.
So my mom agreed to get me a guitar from this Fingerhut catalog, which came with a little amp. I remember it was a Harmony guitar.
Oh, shit.
And I remember the first day I got it, I opened up the box. And my E string, my high E string, the smallest one, was broken.
Oh, fuck.
It was, like, snapped, I guess, maybe in shipping or something like that, or got jostled around a little bit or something like that. But I remember being so distraught and just being like, yo, I just want to play my new guitar. So, My dad actually took me to Skylarville Music Store, which used to be on East Tremont.
Yeah, I remember that place. That's where I first started.
There to go get the string replaced. And he inquired about lessons. And he was like, you want to take lessons? He was like, I'm only going to pay for you if you do it faithfully. And if you dedicate yourself to it and actually do it. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And bro, I think I missed one lesson in like 5 years because I was like really sick.
Wow.
Yeah, bro. So I was like.
All in.
I was all in, man. All in. And I mean, plus, you know, I didn't really have much to do then. We had just moved to Throg's Neck and everything like that. I really didn't have any friends. So I stood hours practicing like every fucking day. And it was something that I looked forward to coming home from school and everything like that. So anyways, fast forward, wrote my first song when I was like 15. It was about my dog who died.
It's funny because on the Cliff Notes, I have first song bullet pointed, but I never knew that. See, once again, I learned. So your first song was about your first pet.
Yep. It was called Goodbye. And it's actually recorded. But these are like, you would have to come to me and I have to break the CD out from it's that deep, bro. It was with my old band, Just a Feeling. So that was actually my first band that I was ever in. It was a punk band called Just a Feeling. And wow. We were based out of Woodside, Queens. So I would have to travel to Queens like every weekend. And as like a 15-year-old with a freaking guitar on my back, just
wow.
But I did it. I did it faithfully. It was awesome. It was great. I usually would just sleep over my drummer's house where we would practice. And that's how I did it. So I was with that band for so long till I was about 18. So it was like 3 years. So I did that straight and I never hung out in Throg's Neck. Never hung out where I lived. I was always in Queens, Manhattan playing a show. Lower East Side doing a show or something like that, or you know, and that's pretty much my roots, man. That's where things like started, and that's where I got like my performance chops up really in those 3 years as a frontman and just as a lead singer, like got all the nerves out of myself and everything and got really comfortable being on stage, and it was great.
I was just about to ask, when you were in Just the Feeling, you were the front man for vocals and lead guitar?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was a punk band, so it was all like kind of power chordy. Gotcha. But I would do little leads when I could and stuff like that, you know. So yeah, pretty much.
And the first time ever doing any kind of music stuff in front of people ever was with that band, or did you do like anything in school?
I did do well, there was always school concerts. When I was in junior high school, I was already playing for like a few years, and they would always have me pull out a guitar solo and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, you know, the rest of the band, they were kids, you know, still learning. So it was all like, bah, bah.
Were you like the go-to? What was it like? Drew has the solo like every time?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. It was like that big finale, like, all right, cool, we're gonna end with the guitar solo and then cut out.
That must be like a big like boost of confidence though for somebody in junior high school.
It was as a kid, and actually it got me a lot of popularity for some reason. Like I was always like the cool guy that played an instrument in school, and I don't even know why. I was like, you know, a lot of people play instruments, but I guess these kids were just really impressed or something, I don't know.
Well, you're really fucking good. So,
thank you, bro.
So you mentioned never hanging out in Throg's Neck, which I wish I never did, so how did you were performing in Queens and Manhattan, how did like the Bronx music scene opportunities like come about? Is there like somebody you met that got you involved in that?
You know, it's funny, it was so long ago. I actually, I got into the Bronx scene because I believe it was probably Dave Rose or somebody who was running Rumors at the time that became Waterberries. here in Throgs Neck.
Oh, okay.
There was a place called Rumors, which is like
is that
right
a bar?
Around the block from FLC.
Oh.
And there was a show there, and they booked Just a Feeling. And I remember playing that show, and we did pretty good, you know, for not really practicing that much, you know, because we were practicing like once, twice a week, you know. But we did pretty good, and you know, eventually I ended up leaving that band and going solo, but Dave, I guess, kept me, you know, in the loop and stuff. And then I started doing like solo gigs eventually and doing like my own thing. I was cutting out recordings on MySpace. I remember
the MySpace.
Yeah, man. I had my own little thing going. I made my own little name. I had my own little brand, you know, just Drew Torres and shit like that. And I was doing the coffee houses at Lehman. I was that eventually led to the big acoustic show that was the first time I got to step on that FLC stage. I remember it was like it was in the month of March. I don't remember what year, man. It was so long ago. It might have been like 2006 or 7, bro.
Jeez, that's a while back.
Yeah, man, it was a while back, bro. But yeah, it was a crazy experience for me to get up there, and people were like, whoa. And I remember selling all my demos that night. I had just made these little home recordings, and I remember just they were selling like hotcakes, and I was like, I ended up selling out that night, that first night at FLC. And
wow.
And I guess that's how my name started kind of spreading around, and people started to get to know me, and it was like, oh, shit. And then eventually TFAC hit me up, and a lot of people from like, I was doing a lot of open mics, you know. I didn't go to college after high school, so I just was grinding. I was out there in the Lower East Side. I would do sometimes 3 or 4 open mics a week.
Wow. You know,
I was going to the Creek in the Cave in Forest Hills, Long Island City.
Oh, the Creek in the Cave. That wound up like turning into a big comedy spot. Like
comedy, right? Yeah, yeah. So it used to actually be music and comedy and a nice little bar. Just a cool, awesome little place to just hang out.
It's a nice place, yeah. Man. Rest in peace. Nice.
I think it's still there, right?
No.
It's not?
Fucking pandemic. It was one of the first places to go during the pandemic.
Their nachos were the best, bro.
Dude, Lauren took me there like the year before COVID to go like see like Big J, like he was there. And like I remember it had like such a nice punk rock vibe, but it was like a nice place that there was a downstairs. Did you perform downstairs or upstairs?
I did downstairs.
Yeah, they have a nice room down there for performing. The pinball machines.
Go downstairs and like right to the left. It was like right there.
Yeah.
Oh no. I think where I was upstairs to the left. I think the bar was downstairs.
Yeah, there's a bar downstairs. Yeah, the bar's to the left downstairs, and then like they have like pinball machines and shit. I don't know if they had that when you were there.
They did later on when I started hanging out there, like just to hang out there because I missed the place.
Yeah.
They had the whole arcade machine and the pinball thing, and the pool table downstairs. Yeah. So I was like, oh shit, okay, all right, this is a spot now. Like, it's, you know, I just wish they were closer, man.
Man, that's crazy, Lauren, that like you played there. I didn't know that either. And also, like, I started to hang out there with Lauren 2 or 3 times, like right before. Yeah. Fucking COVID fucked it.
I feel you, man.
Damn.
Yeah, dude. So it was, my life was all about open mics, man. There was this place on 86th Street that I used to like, DTUT, which stood for Downtown Uptown. That was a nice little open mic that they were running. Sidewalk Cafe on Monday nights had a nice open mic thing. They're closed down, I think, too now.
Damn.
Bro. All the venues, man. I used to play Bowery Poetry Club a lot.
I remember that place.
The New Eureka Poets Cafe. That was a great experience. I even got to play the Blue Note, the famous jazz club.
I've heard of the... you've mentioned this in private conversation to me. Describe to people that are listening or watching what the Blue Note is, why that's important.
So the Blue Note is pretty much like a, it was a happening spot back in the jazz era, you know, when, you know, famous musicians would play there, you know, I mean, like the greats, all the greats, you know, Miles Davis, Wynton Marsalis and all them, you know, Hancock, you know, forget it. The list goes on and on, bro. The place is just, it's a landmark, man. It's fucking amazing. But really, really sick spot, man. So nice.
Do you think that might have been one of your favorite places to perform when you were starting out?
That was a good spot, but I actually didn't play my original stuff. I actually improvised the whole time I was on that stage because I was playing with I was actually backing up a couple cats from this group called Symphonics.
Okay.
And I was there on guitar. I was doing my thing. I was doing my slaps. And my boy Dove was singing hooks. And my boy Sean Randall was rapping and just vibing and getting the crowd going. And it was beautiful, man. It was a beautiful experience. Like, we didn't really know what we were going to deliver, but we just got out there, got up on that stage, and we just all improv and just vibed with each other, and the crowd vibed with us. And it was a crazy, beautiful experience. My heart was freaking out my chest by the time I got off stage because I was so nervous because I was like, yo, I gotta make some shit up. Like,
yeah, for what, like a 45-minute set or longer?
It was like 20-25-minute set. So it wasn't the longest, so thankfully,
still,
you know,
still pressure, though, to improv for 25 minutes straight, though.
Bro, on that stage with that kind of, like, oh my god, bro, nerve-wracking. There was even like a green room in the back that I was like chilling in before. I'm like, oh my god, all right, I got this. Like,
would you say, like, after, like, you know, you've been doing this for so long that that's like the ultimate test, you think, of a good musician, probably, like, to get up there and improv with people that, like, you barely got to practice with? Because I've heard a lot of, like, other musicians on other radio shows and podcasts. Corey Taylor has said the same thing. He said, you have to do it live and sometimes have to do it live without a net.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say, okay, there's a lot of really great musicians out there who are good at what they do because they work hard, they're structured, they're disciplined, they have a lot of, a lot of time, a lot of patience, and they work hard on specific things. And then there's some people who are good at just, you can just kind of throw anything at them and they're like, kind of like right there, like they're in there and they feel it. You know, music is the language of the soul, and it doesn't always have to be so structured and so on paper and so theoretical.
Yeah.
A lot of times it can just be felt and be expressed through your feelings, your emotions, your intuition, because a lot of times you got to also anticipate as a musician what another musician is about to do. Like, you know, you kind of feel it, you kind of have to, I don't know, you gotta groove with it. And yeah, you just, like, bro, I gotta say, like, there's some cats out there that I've played with where it's like instant connection, bro, like instant. Like, there's guitarists out there that I'm just like, oh, just, I just vibe with just naturally, you know? And other musicians, keyboardists, drummers, bassists, like everything, like, you know, there's just some people that can just take their instrument and just fucking go.
do you remember, like, so for those of you, you know, like I said, that are new to this, catching up, like who we are, Drew has been teaching me guitar and on and off sessions for years. Do you remember what you said to me the first time we sat down for a full hour lesson? Do you remember, like, how you started it after you were done teaching me chords?
No, what did I say? Refresh my memory.
So you taught me, like, all my open stuff, and then we started getting the scales and, like, reading it.
Yeah.
And then I was having a little bit of trouble reading certain stuff, and, like, you didn't get upset or anything. You went, all right, I see, like, how you learn. and like you put the paper down, you went, I'm not gonna teach you theory. Fuck theory. Yeah. He was like, forget what I just said. He's like, I'm gonna teach you in a different way, which you were basically letting me improv, like pretty much. You were just showing me ways to improv. But yeah, I'll never forget that, dude. I'll never forget you turning over the paper that you wrote on. And like I said, he wasn't upset. He just caught the way I learned. I was a visual learner. And you went, all right, fuck theory. We're not doing theory. Like,
some people, you know, honestly, I'm not a theory guy myself. I know it. I'm familiar. You know, I know where everything goes. I know how it's supposed to look. I can read piano sheet music, which is both, you know, treble and bass clef at the same time. Yeah. It's no problem. It's just getting a feel for it and getting, like, knowing everything. There's just so much. It's so much because you got to take notes of your flats and sharps at the very beginning of the thing. You got to take note of your tempo. You got to know, like, you know, rest, when you're coming in, what this is, what, you know, little flag notes, little ties, things like that. Bro, it was what I went through in high school for 4 years because I was in the jazz band. So I had nothing but sheet music in front of me all day, every day. Sheesh. And I vandalized this damn sheet music by just writing the chords out right on top of the thing. So I was just like, all right, I got this here. So I ended up having like a cheat sheet, you know, for myself for like 4 years. And, you know, guy didn't say anything. My teacher didn't say anything. Shout out to Mr. Mazzola.
Yeah, I remember like that. Once again, that was a similar way you taught me, where when you would write out stuff for the song, you would put the chord above it. And then now when I practice at home and I'm looking up stuff, I catch myself doing that now. Like, I write out what chord it is.
It helps, especially if you have like the lyrics. Like,
yeah.
Like, learn something with words. It's like you can tell, like, okay, at this word, I'm going to change to this key and this chord and things like that. It's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. Speaking of lyrics, dude, I think, and I'm not just saying this because you're my boy, but I don't know anybody else that writes lyrics the way you do. Like, I think it's like amazing. Where does like that influence come from? I mean, for those of us that know you, like, you've openly spoke that like you're a big Green Day fan and the punk side is very like Billy Joe Armstrong influenced, but there's a lot more in there, like, because you have like a MC side of you too. You like, you have bars. Drew has bars.
Thank you, bro.
Don't worry, I'm not gonna ask you to freestyle. I wouldn't put you under. Oh, no.
It's all good. I didn't think you were. It's all but lyrics, man. Lyrics. I don't know, dude. I honestly couldn't even tell you where I get the mind for it. I don't know where it came from. I remember that I used to really suck at it. Like, bad, bro. I have books. But you know what? That's why. I never fucking stopped. I never stopped doing it. Even though I was really, really shitty at it in the beginning. Because, bro, I was, man. And I started writing songs at 15. And that first song that I wrote, Goodbye, it was good for a 15-year-old, but it's incredibly cliche. Like, the lyrics are, like, super, like, something you would hear, like, on fucking 80s radio. Like, it was so, like, cliche, like, just, you know, how can I ignore the memories of us rolling on the floor? Like, stuff like, it was just like, how can I forget the day we met? You know, really, like, stuff, like, just kind of, you know, meh, it's just there. But I never stopped. I just kept writing songs, and I kept writing and kept writing and kept writing. And then I eventually learned to convey more of my life in a metaphorical way. And I started utilizing my vocabulary a lot more. And I started to, you know, branch out genre wise, because I was like, well, it's just me. So what's holding me back, really, at this point? You know,
there's no limits at that point.
Exactly. It was just like, bro, just shoot the fucking stars, man. So
I would say even in the band, like, I feel like there's no, like, I always say this when I talk about you. You've heard me say this thousands of times. I can't slap a genre on you or the band.
Yeah, I don't want that either.
That's yeah, like, I don't know what the hell you would get listed up there on a streaming platform, but I say it all the time. Like, you look at a song like a Novella, right? Like, that's like this reggae pop song. And then you look at Bottle, which is, by the way, you might have told this to me months ago. There's no chorus in Bottle, right?
No, there isn't.
Yeah. It's like a straight up freestyled metal track.
There's no chorus in that song. Yep. It's one of, like, I have a few songs that are like that, but there's like no chorus, but they're super old. I used to write like that, bro.
I think that's cool.
I might bring back some shit, bro. Honestly, I might bring back some shit.
Yeah, I would be super excited to hear it. But yeah, but like, there's no, like, I love how well-rounded you are, because, like, going back to the influences thing, like, you can see that, like, you listen to everything when you listen to your music.
Oh, absolutely, bro. That's key, man. That's vital, because, you know, you can't just gain influence from one specific genre. Like, you know, as a teenager, I listened to nothing but, like, punk, reggae, and metal. Punk, reggae, and metal. And that's all it was for me, is punk, reggae, and metal, constantly. And hip-hop, of course. And, you know, hip-hop just naturally, we're from the Bronx, it's just ingrained in us, you know what I mean? Like, hip-hop is just, it's not even like a genre anymore, it's just a life, like, it's just part of your life, you know? You go into somebody's car, they're usually playing, 95% of the time they're playing hip-hop, you know? That's, go to a club, you go anywhere, somebody's, you know, waiting for something, you know, someone in between sets or something waiting to play, they're usually playing some old school hip hop or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. God, what was I getting into? Oh, yeah. So me branching out and listening to different music, getting into, you know, more indie and dance hall and, oh, my God, just Latin feels, bossa nova, things like that, like more obscure things, and just branching out and listening to all of these sounds and all these things, jazz especially, and funk. So, like, that really, really influenced the whole genre rainbow thing that I've been doing.
Do you think that helped with, like, because you learn, like, songs that you enjoy on the side, obviously. Like, do you think that made it easier to learn stuff, too? Because, like, I hang out with this guy, he's my best friend, and when he has a guitar in his hand, we're sitting around chilling, I'd be like, play, do you think you know this? And, like, nothing needs to be researched, he just plays it. Like, he looks up into the sky for, like, 5 seconds, and then he figures it out. Do you think that you, like, branching off, like, starting to listen to other stuff helped with your playing and learning as well? Or do you think that you still had that natural thing from playing for so long?
Yes and no, because, man, I was on a writing spree for like years and I never did covers, bro. I mean, like, years and years straight. I never did covers. I only played my own music. And I think I might have learned a couple Green Day songs, a couple Metallica songs, some Ozzy, and like some Sublime over the years. Oh, and like Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Like little alternative shit here and there, just like to play at parties and shit, you know, just so people are like, oh, cool, you know, some Incubus, shit like that. But other than that, bro, my cover catalog was like, slim, dude. It's just playing and just playing and playing for hours a day for so many years. I can hear something now and it's almost like I know where on the fretboard, like, to at least like start, or at least I get a feel for the bass note and I can figure it out from there. You know what I mean?
I've watched you do it. It's amazing.
Yeah. So, like, you see me, like, slide around and just looking for the bass note. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Well, if this is the bass note, then the chord is here. you know, and I'm like in it, and that's pretty much how that comes about, dude. It's just feel and an ear. That's pretty much it, man.
Man, and thank you for having it because it's helped me.
Oh, dude, of course, man. No, man, like you practicing so much, and just when you tell me that, you know, you practice for like 3 hours, bro, that shit makes my heart light, bro. I get mad happy. I get excited. I'm just like, bro, because you're on your way.
When I nailed that Last Resort riff the other night, I was like the first person I went into my phone. I was like, gotta send it to Drew. Dude, I was racking my hand on that for 2 weeks straight, and I don't know what it was. I was blocking out something by accident. And then I somehow figured it out by the grace of God the other night, and I like got off my futon, and I was like, yes! Like, and I immediately sent it to him.
But bro, from the first video that you sent me to that last one, there is like drastic fucking improvement, bro. Insane.
Thank you.
It's insane, bro. You know, sometimes too, what helps is like practicing before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know why. For some reason, like muscle memory just like sticks so much better when you just like do something or read something and you just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I've managed to memorize all my lyrics.
Ever since like you started teaching me, whenever I practice a song before bed, like rigorously too, if I do it a week or two straight, then my hand just becomes like accustomed to it at a certain point.
Exactly. Even the stretches and shit, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, it gets a little easier every day. Yeah. Man.
So I wanted to get into two things and then lead into a third, only if you're allowed to talk about the third. So I'll do the two first.
Sure,
so you were playing for like all these years, open mics, clubs, and then you eventually get an FLC. You eventually get to like open up for Michael Graves.
Yeah, I did.
And you got on Warp Tour also.
Mm-hmm.
So explain like that process. Like, how does that opportunity come about? And you can be honest about the Michael Graves thing too, because you've spoke to me privately about it. If you want to talk about it, you can.
The Michael Graves thing, I don't even remember who booked me for that show, but somebody asked me, you know, actually, it might have been, I think it was somebody from The Haunt, like one of the workers. I think it was actually somebody who had seen me there like recently, because I was playing that place kind of frequently. It was, I was doing maybe like once a month there for like a few months. That's where I met John Black, and I met a lot of people there actually that I still like keep in contact with and shit.
Nice.
But that show, that Michael Graves show, that was pretty fun and very, very interesting.
If you can't get into certain stuff, it's cool.
I don't want anything to come back and bite me in the ass.
Gotcha.
But let's just say we didn't sell the house out.
Got it.
You know, there weren't that many people there, but that stage was awesome. The sound was awesome. And I actually ended up getting a lot of free beer that night.
There's nothing to complain about with free beer.
You know what I'm saying? So it was an honor to be able to open up for Michael Graves of the Misfits, you know, and just another notch to add to the awesome shit that I've gotten to experience through musicianship, which is great. Another good one was Dick Dale, you know, may he rest in peace. He was the king of surf rock. He did the theme song for Pulp Fiction.
Oh shit.
Yeah, so I got to open up for him at Ortley Beach, New Jersey at the surf club.
That's cool.
That was such a beautiful show, man. I just was on stage doing my thing and I would look out and I just see the horizon, bro. I just see the water and the sun setting on the horizon. It was insane.
That sounds like a cool atmosphere. You said that was in New Jersey?
All the way down at the end, like by the Jersey Shore, Ortley Beach.
Man, that's cool.
It's kind of deep, but bro, what an experience, man. So the whole Warp Tour thing.
Yeah, how did that happen? See, now this is something that we've talked about off the show, but I don't think I've ever asked how you got on it.
I got on it because I knew the hype man and tour manager of Gym Class Heroes. So he, my boy Mark De Jesus, shout out to Mark. Bro,
shout out Mark.
He actually got me in and got me to play the MySpace stage. And in New York, it was really cool because Travi himself actually introduced me before my set. So they had just played an acoustic set and I was right after them.
Wow.
In the MySpace tent. So it was crazy, like him just being like, this is my boy Drew, about to kill it for y'all.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I got to open up for Gym Class Heroes at Knitting Factory as well, too. And I actually,
wow.
Yeah, I had a little three-piece band going as well. Drew Torres and the Gusto.
Nice. So at the Knitting Factory, that's another nice spot in Brooklyn. Thank God that place is still there.
Yeah, bro.
That's a fun place to go to.
I opened up for Gym Class Heroes, Hangar 18, who's a sick hip-hop artist, and Cobra Starship.
Shit.
Mm-hmm.
You have a pretty good track list, like opening for cool ass people.
Yeah, bro, it was insane, man. Insane.
And you've played Irving Plaza before, haven't you? Was it Irving?
No, I played Starland.
Starland, that's a good venue as well.
Yeah, so I played that stage by myself, that huge ass stage.
Wow,
bro, I was a sack of nerves. That was from winning like three rounds of an open mic, of a Battle of the Bands by myself as well.
So it was just you acoustic and you won a whole three round Battle of the Bands competition.
Yep. And got to the semifinals and played Starland Ballroom.
If that doesn't show you how good Drew is, there was no band. It was just you being awesome.
It was crazy, man. It was fun. My dreads were like, oh my God.
You know there's some pissed off drummer somewhere till this day who lost the Battle of the Bands thing and is like, that fucking Drew Torres guy.
But you know what's crazy, though, is the thing started at the Bowery Poetry Club. And I still kind of remember a lot of the bands. They were actually really cool about it. They were like, man, you deserve that, bro. They were like, you killed it. Like, it's fucking amazing, you know? But what's awesome about that is my boy Doug was running the front door at that time, and he was just like, no. Really? He was like, yeah, you got this, bro. You got this shit. And he was right, man. He was right. He was fucking right.
That's so cool. This is the thing I'm not sure if you're allowed to talk about. So I'm going to ask it without saying the name, and then if you can say it, because I think it'd be an interesting story. If you can't, we'll just go on.
Okay.
You play for so long that eventually, like, you know, you want to attempt to get signed, I'm assuming, as you're in the middle of your career. You've told me off camera, off podcast, that you were given an opportunity by a certain place. Is that something that is okay to talk about, or can we talk about it without the name?
Okay, so like let's call them so and so.
Gotcha.
So and so records. Yeah, I did a little something for them. I did a little radio interview type thing for someone who was an affiliate who worked with them, worked closely with the bands. Which at the time included like Taking Back Sunday and, you know, I think that was their biggest act at the time. So, I mean, it was an ambitious thing, you know, it was an indie label and they had it. It was like up and coming, but then things just kind of went belly up and they're not even around anymore. So, you know, me staying where I was actually just, it was good. It sustained me, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
no harm, no foul, basically. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't I didn't do damage to my, I didn't do anything, you know, that benefited it either, but I didn't damage my career or anything like that, or, you know, end up in a financial hole or something, you know.
There's a lot of politics when it comes to stuff like that.
Exactly. Like, I've never been signed, so I really don't know what the details entail nowadays, especially now with being a digital age and everything like that. Everything must be so much more different than when you had a record contract, you know?
Like, yeah. I was going back to that FLC, like, you know, like you said, you were selling demos and sold out your demos. So, yeah. Kids, what that means is Drew went into a recording studio, recorded his songs, played a show, and sold the CDs he recorded his songs on, and he sold them out.
Yeah.
He didn't have a table but a Spotify link card on it.
I just had MySpace.
Yeah.
That was all I had, MySpace, man.
Which, by the way, shameless plug, go listen to Drew Torres' music on Spotify.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
No problem. besides all the music and stuff, though, we meant to talk about this the last time you were on the show, and we never got to touch on it, because I think we were way too busy laughing. But you did, like, right before COVID, you did a play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, talk about that. Like, what it was about, how you got the opportunity, because you were super excited about it, I remember.
Yeah, that was fucking awesome. It was called The Archetypes. It was a production done by Beyond Liminal, who was run by my boy Rob and his friend Stephanie. Oh, she's a mutual friend of ours as well. They're both, everybody's friends. But we all know each other. Right?
All homies.
Fucking semantics. Anyway. These guys put this beautiful fucking production together and had me be a part of it. And I got to act out a nice monologue. I got to perform one of my original songs, Smile, nice. Which was fucking, it's a different feeling when you're performing for like a theater audience. It's like all eyes are on you, like, for sure, for sure. You know that that's what they're there for. That is what they're watching. Like, they are looking into every piece of symbolism that is directed toward the whole, like, grand scheme and big picture of this production that they're watching. You know, it's a beautiful experience. You know, it feels so different from when you're playing a club or a bar or something. You know, it ain't stepping.
Yeah. And was your dialogue was music based, wasn't it? From what I remember you telling me.
It had a pentameter to it. It had like a little beat to it. Kind of was very like, it was basically about this character who was based on Franz Kafka's archetypes. It's a different personality type. So I was the shadow. And I guess my shadow being the creative being that I am, and having that aspect of my life being something that, you know, comes from like an unknown place within, you know, the shadow self, you know. So it's basically, it was a nice thing on personalities, on plays, and just the human psyche, you know. It was
that's cool. Fucking deep. And was it like going into it, because you're so used to playing shows, was this more nerve-wracking than doing a music performance?
Yeah, it was, because, bro, there was a lot more preparation for this. There was like, you know, I mean, I could pick up my guitar and play every day, but to coordinate something with all these people, and, you know, this is a production like that you're a part of, you are a vital piece of this thing, this puzzle, you know. So it's like, you have your part, and it's very, very important for you to do it at the best of your ability, you know. So of course there's so much more like pressure, you know, when I'm playing on stage with like the guys and shit like that. Like, man, one of us will fuck up a note, nobody will notice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because we're busy, we're going, we're fucking doing, just walk right past it.
Yeah,
you know? But when you're on stage like that, and like the spotlight's on you, and there's only you and one other person like doing things actively on stage, it's fucking, it's pretty like,
it's intense.
It's, the adrenaline definitely starts flowing.
Yeah. I remember like thinking it was so cool when you told me that, because, you know, like we're close friends and I know how long you've been plucking away at music, but I also know you're passionate about doing other stuff. And I remember like how excited you were like when you told me about that. And I remember thinking like, man, that's so cool, because it's still in his realm in a sense. It's music. But like I would say at your core, not only are you a musician, but I think you're a performer. Like you think you're a creative entertainer. And I was so bummed I couldn't make it because I had work stuff, but I remember like thinking like, man, like that's so cool that he gets to do like this thing he loves in a completely different way than what he's used to.
Yep. It's crazy, because we actually ended up taking a piece of the play. And when I played FLC with the guys, we had Stephanie do her interpretive dance from the play to Smile.
I remember that. That was cool.
Mm-hmm. So you got to see like pretty much what I did there, you know, only you didn't get to hear the monologue and all that shit, but you know, that dance and shit that she did and everything, like bro, that's all happening next to me on stage. And I'm just like there, like playing, and I'm like, oh, man, this is insane. This is intense, bro.
You also composed music for a documentary.
Yes, I did.
Tell those people what the documentary is about and why they should watch it.
Hope in the Dark, it's called. It's about Hurricane Maria. And it is a PACE documentary that I had a lot of fun working on. It was great. The process was just insane. Like, it was just cool to like be in a room and to make up things to this movie that I was just like, you know, the headphones are going, my feelings are going, my emotions, and just my hands are just fucking, I don't know. Like, it was almost like I tried to make some sort of background narration for this thing. And it came out great. It came out beautiful. And they, the person who's making the, well, there were many, many people making this documentary, but the main, you know, the head like professor on it, we played it for her over a FaceTime call or something. It was something like this, like a Zoom call or something like that.
Yeah.
And I remember she started like tearing up when she heard it, and she was like, ah, she was like, God, that's, she was like, that's beautiful. That's like, that's what I wanted. That's like exactly what we need for this. I was mad, like, oh, yes.
That must be like such a super gratifying feeling, because somebody's basically like putting like a part of their art in your hands.
Yes. Like, and trusting me with it. Like, yeah. Like, wow. It was crazy going to the screening, man. I got emotional. Like, I got all teary eyed and seeing my name in the credits, man. It's nice, man. So that documentary is actually, you can see it on YouTube.
Okay.
It's just called Hurricane. It's actually called Hope in the Dark. You can check that out on PACE Docs, I believe.
Gotcha. Yeah, guys, go check that out. Like, you know, you do the play, you compose for like for this documentary, and you know, what else like do you want to do, man? Like, obviously, like I know stuff that you're doing that I'm not going to say on here until you're ready to tell the rest of the world. But, you know, what else do you want to do outside writing albums? Because I think the sky's the limit, bro. Like, you've already branched out over the few years, and it's, and all of it is successful.
Well, you know, man, I don't, voiceovers. That's what I want to conquer next. That's what I'm going to go for. I'm going to,
you love cartoons.
I fucking love cartoons, bro. I do. I'm obsessed. Absolutely. Cartoons and anime and anything that doesn't look like real life.
What's Well, yeah,
don't get me wrong, I'm a huge movie fan too, but on my downtime, I am usually watching cartoons or anime.
What's your top? Give me like a top three cartoons for you of all time. If somebody's like listening right now and they're like, I should get into cartoons, give them three.
Ren and Stimpy.
Yes.
Rocko's Modern Life. And Shin-Chan.
Shin-Chan. Well, I never heard of that one. What's that one about?
It's actually, it was on Adult Swim. It's about this little kid named Shin, and he's just the raunchiest little kid, always making fart and ass jokes, and it's hilarious. And the way his mom interacts with him is just, like, ridiculous. It's hilarious, bro. It's like, one of those things, man, where it's like such an adult cartoon, but it looks so kiddish. Like, it looks so,
it looks like it's like, for children.
Yeah, it really does. And it's like, oh my god, when you hear the shit that comes out of their mouths, you're like, it's just like one of those things, bro.
What cartoon would you like to voice over? Is there any cartoon that like you would love to get a chance, like let's say if they rehashed something? Or would you more so want to do your own original stuff?
You know what, bro? Honestly, I would love to be the voice of any, like, Star Wars cartoon character.
That would be cool.
Any, like, Disney character. I mean, you know, I can sing and everything like that. Like, any kind of, like, Disney role or Star Wars or... I know that's, like, shooting real high up there and everything like that. But even something, you know... like a Rick and Morty type too, you know, very like you know, very like raspy, kind of like, you know, gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, honestly, anything that I feel like fits, like if they're looking, if they give me a description of something, I could probably do a voice for you, you know.
Yeah, no, your impressions of people are hilarious. Yeah. And I know, like, you told me, like in the middle of the pandemic that you were already kind of, like, just working on stuff a little bit, like, in the downtime.
Yeah.
So, like, you're already ahead of the curb, in a sense, with it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that movie voice thing. Bro, I would love to do that. I would fucking love to do that, you know, coming next fall.
You know? Yo, yeah. Yo, yeah, you imitate that so
I would love to do that shit, bro. If I could be that guy. Like, we can't have that many guys that do that on this
earth. Yeah, right? There has to only be like three of them.
You know what I'm saying?
It wouldn't hurt to have a fourth.
I need to be the fourth horseman, bro.
That's so fun. I never thought of that. That's a good point. How many of those dudes are there?
You know what I'm saying? Or those guys that read the shit like really, really fast at the end.
Yeah.
I could probably do that. Yeah, like the radio commercial shit.
Yeah, like side effects may include diarrhea, shitting, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like if you were to do a voice
and shitting.
I feel like if you were to do a voice for ending of a commercial like that, you would laugh too much.
I probably would. We have to do like full takes at least.
Oh my god. Oh, I had a few short ones to end it out here. What's your favorite record? That an album that you could go back and listen to over and over again?
Shit. Fucking, it's a really, really obscure punk album. It's so stupid because I'm like, God, let it go already, man. You've been listening to this album since you were like fucking 15 years old. But dude, it's still like, I have it on CD. I have it on vinyl. I have it in a playlist on Spotify. Like, I've been listening to this one album for like half my life, dude. It's this band called Oscar, O-S-K-E-R. And the album is called Idol Will Kill.
Idol Will Kill.
Bro,
that's a cool name for an album.
I've been listening to this album since I was 15.
Damn. I mean,
actively.
That's a long time.
It's crazy, man. I was still in high school. It was just, I don't know, man. I think I bought like 3 copies of it because like I lost one. My Discman. No, I lost my Discman and that CD was in it.
Shit.
And so that was one copy. The second copy got so scratched up that it wouldn't play anymore. And then the third copy, I think one of my ex-girlfriends was like, here, you can have mine.
Wow. Well, you'll always have it in some way or another.
Well, shit, now, yeah. I've got the CD, the fucking vinyl, and the Spotify shit, man. I'm on it.
Before my last one, favorite video game, and I guess that's a two-parter. Why the hell are you so good at Tetris? Drew is amazing at Tetris.
Bro, I've been playing Tetris for fucking forever, man. Since like 5 years old. And there's people out there who are way better than me. Seriously.
I believe it, but you like watching you play is like mind blowing to me. I can't.
Nah, man, that actually shit, that might be my okay. Damn, that's so hard, bro. I can't.
You give me a top 3
if you want. I love Tetris. Like I love Tetris, bro. But one of my favorite games ever since I was a kid is Contra.
Okay. For
NES, like the original Contra for Nintendo. I could still play that game today. Sometimes I do, like when I'm like waiting for an Uber or something like that, or I'm like just hanging out here or whatever, I'm like waiting for something, like hair dyes in my hair or something, I'm here playing Contra.
Nice. Man,
the new Xbox, and I bought the Contra Anniversary Series collection on it.
Oh shit, really?
So I'm like, fuck all these games that are all out and new and modern. I'm gonna play Contra on this brand new Xbox.
Fucking A, man. Dude, but I guess to end it out, I guess my final question would be like, and I guess this come anybody could take anything from this. You know, I've known you a long time, and you know, we don't have to air out anything personal on here, but like, you know, we're best friends, we tell each other everything, and you've gone through some stuff, man, that like I can't imagine another human being going through, but you still like manage to have such a positive like outlook on things and like positive motivation to push forward in life. How do you do it, bro? Like what keeps you, how do you keep yourself so grounded, and what advice would you have to give anybody who feels like they can't keep themselves grounded?
Am I grounded?
You do a good job to me, bro.
Oh, man. That's a wow. First of all, thank you. Thank you. That is like, that's actually one of the most beautiful compliments ever. Thank you so much, bro.
No problem.
And, you know, I think if it's one thing that I've learned through all of the bad experiences, is that you're going to live through it.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to live another day. You're going to go to sleep, and you're going to wake up. The sun's going to rise. It's going to be a fresh start. Like, try not to carry yesterday's problems with you tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, or today. You know? Because that's just... it's so depressing.
Yeah. Know?
It's too burdensome to hold, you know? So, rather than even having this luggage... just be yourself, speak your mind, be truthful, be honest. There's nothing that you ever have to be stressed over, you know, because, bro, once you live by a more like, I guess, record this. Jesus. Sounds so bad already. Making me sound like a narcissist.
No.
You want good karma in life if you believe in karma. Yeah. I personally don't. I don't believe in luck. I'm not a superstitious person. I believe that when you do good, good comes from that good.
Yeah.
And it just perpetuates and keeps going further down. You know, when you do bad, you understand that there is a cycle of bad shit that has to come around, or you have to keep doing it to sustain, or you have to, there's always some kind of negative outcome from negative action.
Yeah.
You know, so in order to keep myself from cycling mentally in a spiral of negativity, I try to keep myself as positive as possible, because there is possibility. There is always hope. There can be a change if there needs to be a change, or there can be perseverance and ambition that can be led, you know, into something that's, you know, great, goal-worthy, you know, just, it's, bro, there's so much shit going on in this world.
For real.
The best thing that we could do is just focus on the best for us.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm saying?
Beautifully said, man. I couldn't say anything better myself. I just want to let you know, man, before we end this podcast out and I stop the recording, like, obviously we'll chat for a little bit, but, you know, a few months ago, I was ghost, like, from social media. That was ghosted. The show was on pause. And I want to let you know, and I'm not just blowing smoke, that if it wasn't for a conversation I had with Tina, a conversation I had with Lauren, and a conversation I had with you, you know, when I was at your house not too long ago, a few weeks ago before I revamped the page up, I don't think I would have been doing this. I think those three conversations, especially the one with you, stuck. And you've always been somebody that's motivated me to keep going for my dream. And we're best friends, but you're also a role model to me. And I know other people, dude. And I just want to thank you for that, because I feel like everybody needs that guy in their life. And you are that guy for me. And it's just like an honor to be your friend, man. And I'm a fan too. I'm your best friend and I'm a fan. So.
Well, bro, the only reason why is because I truly and sincerely believe in you, bro. Like, you do this well, and just keep fucking going, man. Keep going. I'm already proud of you. You already know that.
Thank you, bro.
So fucking, you know, it's all love, bro. Anything you need, man, you know me, man. I'm always here. So.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, brother.
Of course, man. Guys, if you haven't already, Drew's music is available on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube as well, right? As the most recent album?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Look Back to the Past is on all streaming platforms, and Welcome to the Present, that's your first album.
It's on SoundCloud, I believe, as well. Every international platform as well. I believe it's just on every platform.
Yeah, the music is everywhere.
It's on everything. It's on Apple Music, Spotify, all the main shit, Amazon, whatever the fuck. You can get it. It's there.
Guys, go check it out. And if they want to follow you on Instagram, where can they follow you at?
At Drew Torres Trio for the band stuff, or me personally at the DA _ Drew Nicorn. Like DREW NICORN, Drew Nicorn.
Hell yeah. Drew, thanks for coming on the show, man. And also, Drew answered the internet with us a while back. It's my favorite one. Thanks to Barstool Sports for making that cool card game. The Drew's episode is my favorite.
Right, thank you, bro. That was a fun time, man.
Yeah, man. And we'll get you back on visual content very soon. The visual content's going to come back. This is going on YouTube. This.
Nice. Awesome, so,
we had a bunch of stuff coming for you. Drew will always be back, and you're always welcomed here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You're a part of this.
Always, man.
And the recording, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And one more for the good guys. Rest in peace, Scott All.
That's right.